Friends, will you pray with me? Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. Oh God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So it feels impossible to make sense of the world right now. It feels impossibly difficult to hold the headlines and the buried leads together, to make meaning that allows one to hold all that they read and all that they see with coherence and integrity. Impossible to tell a story that makes sense of a social media feed that is equal part fall fairs and bomb-struck Lebanon. Impossible. Impossible to hold the devastation of thousand-year floods in North Carolina together with the opening of Boston's newest raising, canes made entirely of gold. Impossible. If you are struggling to make sense of the world right now, it is not because you are lacking something, but because the world is too much. It's too much. If you are a person of faith, it is worse. It is worse in the sense that it is harder. It is more difficult because you are starting, we are starting from a position that believes in a loving God. And so we always have to ask, why would a loving God allow us to be this unrighteous? Or why would a good God, one whose spirit is love alive in the world, make us this way and give us such capacity for violence, for cowardice, for selfishness and harm? We are stuck with impossible whys on top of impossible whats, and we don't have the intellectual escape hatch of the atheist or the ejector seat of the hedonist to free us up to make sense of the world by saying either there is no higher power or the only meaning to make is the pleasure in front of you right now. We, people of faith, we are stuck with the wrestle. We're stuck, like Jacob was stuck, grappling through the night with God and crying out for meaning, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. More to the point, we're stuck like Elijah is stuck, longing for the people to worship Yahweh, unable to convince Queen Jezebel to stop worshiping Baal, fleeing for his life to the mountain where Moses encountered God. We're stuck like Peter is stuck, between a return to fishing and a resurrected Messiah, with a full net of fish and the tangle of how to live in a world where Jesus can rise from the dead and the Roman Empire still rules. We're stuck like these earnest, faithful people, our prophets, our leaders, one who did miracles no one had ever seen, and the other on whom God would build their church. Elijah and Peter are people seeking the will of God in worlds that are too much. And God replies to their earnest, faithful seeking, as God so often does, with a pair of seemingly unrelated questions that at face value make no sense. What are you doing here, Elijah? Simon, son of John, do you love me? We'll take them in turn. What are you doing here, Elijah? Trying to stay alive, trying to stay righteous. Elijah has just been part of a miracle, and now he's faced with the price. You see, Elijah challenged the priests of Baal to a god off, and he won. And then he had to flee for his life. Elijah told the priests of Baal, "You take your bull and your altar and your god, and I'll take my bull and God's altar and my god, and we'll each do a sacrifice, and we'll see which god is real." Baal's priests got their altar and their bull and got all riled up and performed their ritual sacrifice, and nothing happened. And then Elijah got up and he made his own pile of firewood and laid the bull on God's altar, and then, in a bit of a power move, poured water all over everything. And then he said, "Oh Lord, let it be known this day that you are God and I am your servant. Answer me, O Lord, so that this people may know that you are God." And God set it all on fire. Altar, bull, water, everything. Then Elijah, who never could just leave well enough alone, ordered all the prophets of Baal killed. And this horrible act of violence, of course, angered Jezebel, the queen of Israel, who then told Elijah she was going to kill him. This is why he flees to Mount Horeb, because he's quite reasonably scared he's going to be killed. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" "Trying to stay alive. Trying to stay faithful and righteous and live with coherence and integrity." He says, "I have been zealous for the Lord, and I am left alone, and they are seeking my life. It's too much. It's too much for one prophet alone." And so he's fled, believing he is the only one who can see and live rightly, and believing his only option is to do so alone. Peter is also in a rough spot. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" It's perhaps, after all, a fair question for Jesus to ask. Not in the context of the fish bake breakfast sponsored by a miracle, which is the context in which it is asked, but in the context of Peter's relationship with Jesus. Because Peter's relationship with Jesus is a bit of a mess. Peter, faithful, brave, lovable Peter, denied Jesus 3 times in the courtyard of the high priest. Peter, faithful, brave, lovable Peter, then fled and hid with his fellow disciples, leaving Mary to go to the tomb alone and find it empty. And it is Peter, our Peter, who is the disciple who, after seeing the risen Christ, declares that he's going fishing. That after everything he has seen and done, he's going back to the work and the life that he knew before. It makes some sense that he does. His friend and teacher's resurrection comes almost immediately after he denied him, and Jesus was murdered by the state. Surely that falls squarely into the category of too much. And yet, how? How could you see all that Peter has seen and done all that Peter has done, and then go back to what you were doing before? My guess, based on what we know about Peter and how he loved to swing from one extreme to the other, is that he thought he was too flawed to do anything, too cowardly, too selfish, too quick to save his own skin, too imperfect to be worthy to serve. This is the same disciple who first refused to let Jesus wash his feet, and then, when he learned more, asked for his hands and head to be washed too. The one who walked on water until he saw the wind and sank. If Peter, the one who left his nets and followed Jesus, returns to his nets, it is surely because he believes this resurrected Messiah will have nothing to do with the one who denied him 3 times. That he, Peter, has nothing good to offer this too much world. Both of these men see the problems of a too much world and flee. Elijah, because he thinks he is the only one who is righteous. Peter, because he thinks his imperfections make him unworthy to lead anyone. God questions both of these conclusions. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Solitary righteousness, a holy life for one, is no solution at all. Prophets are no good without their people. In what truly is a power move, God makes Elijah eat and rest and then sends him back home. Go, return on your way. Back to anoint kings and raise up Elisha as a successor. Righteousness, living in right relationship with God and creation, is neither solitary burnout nor the accomplishments of a single morally correct individual. It is slow. It is nourished. It is the work of community. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Jesus will not let Peter lose himself in a salty tide pool of self-abnegation. Again, our God makes their leader eat something, this time fish and bread, and then invites him back into relationship, into community. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my sheep. Lead my people, imperfect as you are. Lead as I have loved, beloved. Feed my sheep. Build my church. When the world is too much, it makes sense to want to flee, to hide, to stay safe in solitary splendor, or to become paralyzed from fear of imperfect action. Elijah did it. Peter did it. It seems like it would provide shelter from the storm of a too much world. A cave to keep out the rain, a boat to ride out the waves. The questions that might lead faithful people there are questions like, why would a God allow a people to be so unrighteous? Or why would a God make us with such capacity for violence and cowardice? Make us so selfish and quick to save our own skin? Those just aren't the questions that God is asking. When the world is too much to make sense of, God is asking why we're here and if we love them. And God's response to both those questions is, love my people. Feed my sheep. Anoint the kings you know might fail. Build my church, though you know you will walk on water and sink when you feel the wind. Live in the world. Love in the world. Do your best. Feed my sheep. Support the teams of mules hauling medical supplies to communities devastated by Hurricane Helene. Send funds to Aline Kamakian and her team in World Central Kitchen as they ramp up production in Lebanon. Help people register to vote. Dwell in the world, even as it storms. Take action, no matter how imperfect. Take a nap when you need to. Have a snack. Keep going. Stay in it. Feed my sheep. Amen.